You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm your host, Joe Elia. While many of us work from home, some of us, such as first responders, mail carriers, supermarket clerks, and cooks, continue working during the uncertain course of the COVID-19 epidemic. Clinicians, of course, also continue their services. And we have with us today Suzanne Sadoui, an internist in the Division of General Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, where she teaches residents and medical students. Dr. Sadoui is a deputy editor of the daily Physician's First Watch and has been a colleague of mine there for many years. The other day, during one of her phone calls with the First Watch newsroom, she expressed some frustration with the problems the COVID-19 epidemic has created, and I thought it would be useful for other clinicians to hear about those problems, or to know at least they were not suffering alone. She's kindly agreed to talk with us. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Suzanne.
Thanks for inviting me.
So it's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your experience these days. Last week, as I said, you said you were spending about half your time answering patients and possibly clinicians' questions about COVID-19. And I'm guessing you're probably spending much more time this week.
You know, I have to say, a week span of time has been an enormous difference from last week to this week. A week ago, I would say my clinical experience in a lot of ways was similar to the week prior, in that I still had scheduled patients. I was seeing patients in the office, and I was seeing 15 patients in the day. And last week, I was frustrated, I remember, primarily because added to the usual busyness of seeing patients and filling in regular questions, there was the all of the discussion around, doc, what do you think this is? Can you tell me more about it? How do I protect myself? I think it blows my mind how much things are different this week compared to last week. Suffice it to say, like, if I were to just highlight the fact that this week I had zero patients that I saw in the office for routine visits. Mm-hmm. So beginning on Sunday night, we actually screened all of our patients for the next 2 weeks and contacted all of our patients to let them know that almost all patient visits will take place on telephone.
Huh.
So we sort of divided our patients into three categories. If you're just here to get your physicals and you have no complaints or no problems that have to be followed, we will reschedule you for a month from now. And then there was this category of patients who had problems that were going to see me for routine follow-up, and we converted it to phone calls.
Uh-huh.
Now, we have been advocating for phone visits forever, and we've been told about all the barriers of phone visit. Lo and behold, in the middle of crisis, today I had 6 visits that were phone visits out of the 12 that I was supposed to see in the morning. So 6 of the visits were completely rescheduled. 6 of them were converted to phone visits. And then I have the third category of patients, which are the patients who are symptomatic and need to physically be seen. And we divided those patients into patients with respiratory symptoms, which go to a completely separate clinic, separate wing of our clinic, for whom I have to completely use protections, and then symptomatic patients who say if they have headache or other things that are non-respiratory. So our clinic in the span of 1 week has been utterly transformed.
Huh.
So last week, it was absolutely overwhelming because there was the routine stuff and then the added counseling of the patients around COVID concerns. And then as well as 100 questions on the emails that I was getting via via our gateway messages. 90% of those questions are now being triaged by a separate group of clinicians and nurses. There's a whole hotline that has been developed who basically screen all my messages. And if they're COVID-related questions, they'll triage those questions. So I think the structure of the clinic is utterly different. The feeling around the hospital is absolutely eerie. You walk around and there are not many people around. All of us are on this standby. The residents have all been pulled off the clinic. No routine visits, waiting in case they're needed. And then all the attendings who don't have urgent care responsibility. So, for example, I had urgent care responsibility today, so I physically came to the hospital. But tomorrow, all my patients are going to be phone visits. So I don't have to come to the hospital. So they're not, it's just absolutely surreal. There's no other way to describe it.
So what do you do to protect yourself? I mean, there, in the absence of readily available testing for the presence of the virus.
Essentially, I would say 80% of the patient visits have been converted into future visits or phone visits. The people who are being seen are the people who have acute respiratory symptoms. Those people, we pretend as if they do have COVID, and we have universal precautions for them.
I see.
And other patients who are being seen in urgent care, which are very few patients that are being seen in urgent care, are not absolutely necessary respiratory type symptoms. Those people, we stay away 6 feet. We wash our hands constantly. We have a ton of Purell and other wiping surfaces constantly. These are completely low risk to no risk for possible respiratory process. So, and then all the other respiratory symptoms, be it that you have sore throat, be it you have some nasal congestion, be it you have some ear pain, we get dressed as if it could be COVID. So it's so different this week.
So you're kind of waiting around for the other shoe to drop, aren't you?
Yeah. And I have to say, even my residents are like, I can't believe, because I see the same residents from last week to this week. And we were all saying, I just can't believe where we are in 1 week, where we all are doing our phone visits and we're sort of on this standby. And today, as I was going to a different section of the hospital, Brigham has this music therapist cello player, and they only usually come like once every week or so. Well, she's been playing every day, it seems like all day. And you walk around, and I ran into another colleague who was upstairs, and, you know, you vacillate between like, oh my God, this is so profoundly sad. Like, look at what is happening to our hospital. And then you look around and there will be a message, that it makes you feel like, okay, I'm a soldier. Like, I'm here. If something happens, I'm going to step up. And I have to tell you, at times I get so teary-eyed listening to that cellist playing, because I don't know, there's something incredibly patriotic about it. It's so crazy because the whole atmosphere has changed.
You have a family at home.
Yes.
And young children.
Yes.
Youngish children. And yes. So how are you protecting yourself? Tell me a little bit, if you would, about what that's like.
So I'm in a little bit of a unique position that I'm, knowing that they have 3 weeks off and I have family in the Florida, we're actually contemplating to send the rest of the family to Florida. because there is very good chance that I will be among the few urgent care doctors who will be assigned to see all the respiratory patients, meaning like every day I will be testing symptomatic people. I think that is high risk enough that it might mean they're better off a distant from me. And if they were home, I would probably, in addition to frequent hand washing, etc., I'm in favor of keeping that 6 foot distance, because what if I am one of those asymptomatic people who will contract it? Luckily, the data around the young people are pretty encouraging every day. But I probably would be in favor of just keep a safe distance from me. And in addition to the usual hand washing, the usual wiping the surface, I've been really good about reminding the residents and also reminding the staff that, you know, we should consider ourselves as one of the scarce resources, and we don't want us to be quarantined or furloughed, never mind anything else. So
there is the New Yorker has a daily newsletter, and Benjamin Wallace Wells in the New Yorker, who by the way lives in Boston, was talking with the ethicists about some of the decisions that people might have to make about the use of respirators if things become as bad as they are, say, in Italy.
Yes.
And I know that you've probably thought about that. Have you had conversations with your residents about that?
To be honest with you, we're in a different phase right now, in the sense that we are commenting about how we've been able to reduce census in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital feels empty because we really have been so proactive to divert patients who could be managed at home or elsewhere. And also, I think patients have been really good about trying to avoid the ER and keeping the staff available. So I think at this point, we're just shocked by, my God, we're in this prep mode and we don't know what to expect. I think we haven't prepared ourselves for the other side of the equation where we were totally overwhelmed. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah.
So I don't think we played that scenario as much. I'll tell you one thing about my experience with these phone calls, which has been so unique. You know, we've been asking to try and have phone visits for years, especially in primary care, because so much of it can take place on the phone. Number one, the patients are so incredibly appreciative, Joel. I cannot even tell you that they don't have to come in. But also just how much we can get done on the phone. Literally 90% of what we need to get done could get done on the phone for various patients. And then I was struck by, you know, every conversation at the end comes to COVID discussion, and the level of the discussion has changed. And it's really interesting because last week, the general public was uninformed. So a lot of the questions were very basic questions. What should I do? Now it's so much different and it's so unique to their own situation. You know, I spoke to like my 75-year-old who has to babysit for the grandchildren. And what should she say? What should he say to his daughter about limiting the little kids' play dates? And then I had one of other patients like today was this woman who's working from home, but she has some mental health struggles and she usually runs outside and exercise and the gym has closed. And, you know, and in talking to her about like, you know, what you could do instead, you could do this, you could do that. I want you to still do your online this, etc. You know, it's just completely different discussion from last week. It's much more advanced around how to protect themselves. And I think there is people, my own sense of it right now, the mindset is different. I think people have a mindset of, okay, what can I do instead? How can I protect myself? What can I do instead? And it's not, I think there's basic knowledge, and then they've come to acceptance.
Yeah.
It's almost, this is acceptance. And if they're worried, like I've been really trying to emphasize, maybe you can do A, B, and C, but you could do X, Y, and Z, and you should feel good about that. You're being flexible. You're being resilient. You're still trying to find your way to do the things you need to do. And, you know, people have been so incredibly appreciative. And I think it makes me much, much stronger and in a much better mindset this week compared to last week.
But for the clinicians who haven't yet seen their first case or their first mm-hmm. presumptive case mm-hmm. yet, what's the best advice that you could offer them?
You know, I think the very first few times that I was seeing patients and trying to make decisions, should I send this person for COVID testing? Should I not test them? It was so unsettling because it seemed like every 2 hours the guideline was changing. Mm-hmm. And I would reach out to our infectious disease expert. And after about the second or the third time where I heard them say, you know what, there is no clear-cut answer right now. Here's what we need to deal with. And there's no easy answer. I finally like realized, you know, as physician, we like really, we want certainty. And in this times, you have to understand the guidelines are changing. We don't have the availability of testing all the people we want, and we have to be comfortable with some uncertainty. And I'm better at that now because if the infectious disease person didn't know the answer and says to me, this is my best advice I can give you. And these are all hard decisions, and we just have to live with that. I think there's something calming about that. Hmm. Whereas last week I was terrified that I was making the wrong decision. And now I realize this is such a fluid decision that there's not a black and white answer. And there is some comfort in knowing that we have to make decision with some level of uncertainty. And it just feels different.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Suzanne, for talking with me today about all this.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. A lot to be learned over the next week or so.
Or maybe the next several months.
Yes.
Well, I wish you and your family well. That was our 258th episode, all of which are searchable and available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from the NEJM Group. Our executive producer is Kristen Kelly, and I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening.